Welcome to KABU, Diana Meisenhelter.
Thank you.
Well, you've been a social justice activist in Portland for decades, and in recent years, an organizer with Extinction Rebellion Portland, or XR-PDX. 2 years ago, XR and other climate justice groups succeeded in getting the Portland City Council to declare a climate emergency. This was an important sign of progress in and of itself. But this Wednesday, April 6th, a rally will be held to confront the city for its failure to enact a meaningful climate plan. Organizers for the rally are also taking on some of the groups that are blocking progress. Diana, give us some background on what's been happening since the mayor declared a climate emergency and what this rally is all about.
Okay, so this Wednesday, April 6th, there'll be a local action that starts at 4 p.m. at 121 Southwest Salmon Street. And this is in conjunction with the Global Scientists Rebellion, because this week, the latest installment of the International Panel on Climate Change will be released, and the news is dire. All evidence points to both more rapid climate chaos than originally anticipated, and that leaders haven't done near enough to hold the line at 1.5 degrees centigrade, and thus the consequences of these actions will be unthinkable ecocide and genocide, as food and potable water sources are threatened, as well as from extreme weather, heat, fires, and other climate-related catastrophes. So on Wednesday, led by local scientists, caring citizens will meet outside the Portland Business Alliance offices to demand that they stop obstructing local climate initiatives. And then we'll march to City Hall to demand that the city create a plan with concrete steps towards 10% annual reductions of greenhouse gas emissions. 2 years ago, the City Council declared a climate emergency, but has little concrete to show yet in terms of actual reductions or policies even to reduce carbon emissions. We want clarity in the upcoming budget hearings that we expect the city to develop strong policies for both reducing greenhouse gas emissions and climate resiliency efforts, as the city does not seem to be proposing sufficient resources, especially in terms of the former. Portland Business Alliance has attacked the Portland Clean Energy Fund in a self-interested attempt to discredit the important work being done by the PCF coalition, calling for ludicrous freezing and basic reallocation of the fund in opposition to the framework that was set up by a voters initiative passed by a large margin of Portland citizens, like 65%. Behind the scenes, Portland Business Alliance and other powerful business leaders have worked to effectively kill the Portland Clean Air Protection Act, upsetting since nearly 40% of BIPOC folks in Portland live within 2 kilometers of the 10 biggest polluter point sources. Member organizations like Northwest Natural are suing the state for their climate protection plan. And no friend to the homeless, Portland Business Alliance continues with policies to harass and sweep the most vulnerable members of our community to the effects of climate chaos, like the heat dome experienced last summer, particularly hard on the homeless. Ironically, their so-called clean and safe contract that the Business Alliance has had troubling and unresolved city audit findings, and yet they have the audacity to bully the newly emergent PCF program's audit. The PCF Climate Justice Fund is critical for addressing racial and economic inequities within our community as we transition to clean energy, and it addresses climate change in real substantive ways. Now more than ever, it's important for those who care about mitigating climate chaos to stand up to these Business Alliance bullies and to pressure our elected leaders to take emission reduction actions. So please join us and help us spread the word about April 6th, 4 p.m. at 121 Southwest Salmon.
Thank you, Diana. That was a very succinct, disheartening review of some of the high points and the low points of what's been happening the last few years. The Portland Business Alliance has driven some of the local media coverage that's been critical of the Coalition of Communities of Color and its management of the Portland Clean Energy Fund. And yet when you go onto the audit, the website itself with the audit, it's much more supportive of the management of the fund, noting the its positive steps it's taken and the enormous challenges it faces in implementing this new program. I was also struck by something else in the audit that perhaps you could help explain. Quote, the legislation that is around the establishment of the Portland Clean Energy Fund tied goals for the program to the city's climate action plan, but it expired in 2020. This climate action plan set a vision for Portland's local climate strategies and included 20 objectives and 247 action plans. And the audit goes on to say that this fund has not received the kind of support or guidance from the city that it needs. Can you explain that part of the audit and how it relates to what you're demonstrating about this week?
Well, that is exactly what we're demonstrating about this week. Let's go back to the PBA to start with. They opposed the PSEF fund from the beginning because it's a 1% surcharge on businesses that have over $500,000 in sales. But the fund itself is a first in the nation. It's like a model for other situations, but it's kind of starting from the ground up. And the city auditor, like you said, says that what we're seeing is exactly what you'd expect from a startup. Nevertheless, they've been doing amazing steps like the jobs training, green construction program, and heat pumps for low-income families, and trying to address the tree canopy and improve energy efficiency for low-income families, which also helps with costs and food security measures. But with all these amazing programs that are actually doing concrete things, the city itself has not been putting together concrete policies. They've been talking about their decarbonization pathways now for a couple of years, but the model still isn't even developed, much less the concrete steps in the critical areas that need to be happening, you know, buildings and energy, land use and transportation. They're just getting the build shift committees off the ground, but there's been nothing in terms of actual concrete goals. And so while we have these sort of, you know, get to 50% by 2030 or 2050, whatever, you know, these long-term goals are, we've already lost 2 years. And the newly leaked report that's coming out on Monday says that basically greenhouse gas emissions have to peak within 4 years, which is like the middle of this decade. And within this decade, it has to get to at least 50% reduction. So that means we have to have concrete policies in place to every year decrease the amount of emissions that we're doing if we have any chance. Because right now we're at about a 1.1% increase. Scientists are now saying it's going to be pretty much impossible to keep it to 1.5% or 1.5 degrees centigrade increase. And yet, even at that level, 8% of farmland is no longer able to grow crops. And with each tenth of a degree of warming, basically, there's over a 4-time effect in terms of climate extremes.
And so, Diana,
currently we're on a path for 2 to 4 degrees increase more than now. And so it's absolutely critical that we turn this around. And that's why we need the city to have concrete steps and policies in place. And like the audit said, that has not happened.
So Diana, what about the old political anthem, think globally, act locally? And I think that's part of the idea here is to understand your local struggles as part of something larger and the driving forces behind these petro countries and economies, including our own, and these local fights. How do you see this local resistance and pressure on the city councils as part of something larger that can give us some hope for envisioning a different future, a sustainable future?
Well, I guess Portland has kind of touted itself as a green city and as a model. And yet it's pretty appalling that we don't have policies in place that will do what needs to happen. And if it can't happen in Portland, I mean, what is our hope for the rest of the country and the world? We need to be the ones pushing for these changes and demanding them now. And already, you know, poorer nations are at far greater risk between 2010 and 2020 floods and droughts and storms kill 15 times more in wealthier nations, even though, you know, the poor nations are the least responsible for these emissions.
And that's true locally as well.
Yeah. And so that's our, and yes, again, whether it's the results of COVID or any number of other things, it's the frontline communities that are always hit the hardest. And so all of us need to take, you know, both the moral and the ethical responsibility to do our part to make sure that these changes come about as quickly as possible, because we're in a dire place. And instead of decreasing, the emissions keep increasing. And that's true both in Portland as well as around the world right now.
Before we close, can you say a bit more about the scientists' rebellion here? There's been news coverage this past month about scientists around the globe who despair and continue to document the decline of ecosystems and the decline of a livable planet. And as these industries steamroll movements, yeah, as well, what is that? Does that imply a shift in the scientific community toward activism?
Yes, I think what scientists are saying is that it's been like really discouraging. They keep putting out more and more studies. They keep doing more research. They keep publishing all of these things, making very clear what the science says. And yet the leaders are not responding in the way that they should. And one scientist sort of explained the need for more direction this way. He says, like, imagine two people sitting on a house and one turns to the other and calmly says, the house is on fire and the roof is about to collapse and kill us both. And then goes back to reading their newspaper. It would be completely unreasonable for the other to believe the threat, no matter how real it was. And so what the scientists are saying is we need to put our own bodies on the line. Some have even threatened to stop doing the research until they're listened to, because it is such a dire situation, both ethically and
politically. Yeah.
Politically. Yeah. That action needs to happen right now.
So the hope is not in enlightened leaders, but in communities coming together and forcing politicians from the ground up to respond to the scope and scale of the climate emergency. So before we close, Diana Meisenhelter, just say again how people can find out more details about the event. That's this Wednesday, April 6th, 4 p.m., meeting in front of, say where we're meeting and where people should go online to find out more of the details.
We'll be meeting at 121 Southwest Salmon, and then we'll be marching to City Hall, which is 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue. And you can go to the XRPDX website or Facebook page, which is xrpdx.org. And we hope that you'll join us and help us spread the word, because it's very important to get many folks as possible out there. We have to make this crisis impossible to ignore.
And we hope to have the media there as well. I know I'll gather up my camera crew as best I can to be there and join you and document this, and to keep the pressure on the political and business communities here. Thanks so much for being with us today, Diana Meisenhelter.
Thank you so much, Jan. Thank you.
Keep up the good work.